The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. President Donald Trump discusses the possibility of a late Supreme Court vacancy.
I would move quickly. Why not? I mean, they would. The Democrats would if they were in this position.
And what would happen if Joe Biden is victorious?
If I don't win the election, China will own the United States. You're going to have to learn to speak Chinese.
We'll look back at Biden's vice presidential selection, Kamala Harris.
I think there's an implicit from the mainstream journalists, an implicit understanding or concession that she's not just the star of this ticket. She's actually going to be the main of this ticket.
And I pushed Senator Ron Johnson on the refusal to get James Comey under oath and on the record.
We had a number of my committee members that were highly concerned about how this looks politically.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and let me invite you to join us now by video. And follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow the program as well at Town Hall Review. The presidential race received fuel this week as Joe Biden chose his running mate and Donald Trump closed the gap in the polls. But that quick uptick for Trump was short-lived as the media's overwhelmingly positive coverage of Kamala Harris gave Biden the usual bump. But most realize that's all it is, a bump. The coverage will settle. People were reminded this is a race between the leaders of the tickets and the numbers will tighten again. And while Biden basks in the glow of favorable media coverage, President Donald Trump has a country to run. Unlike Biden, he faces a hostile media every day. It's tough to get a fair interview. This week, though, he sat down with me. Nah, I'm not reflexively hostile. Tough questions, yes, but not reflexively negative. Obviously, he sat down for half an hour with me and answered a series of difficult questions. Would you make a nomination to fill a vacancy that occurred on the Supreme Court?
You mean if something happened like now?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'd do it. Sure, it depends.
If someone in mind?
You know, I don't know what you're talking about, Tim, but if you're talking about if something would happen now, No, I would move quickly. Why not? I mean, they would. The Democrats would if they were in this position. But
do you have someone in mind?
At the end of my term, I'll be up to about 300, could be even a little more, 300 federal judges, including Court of Appeals, Appeals Appellate Divisions, will be at 300. Think of that. 300 judges, probably a little bit more, and two Supreme Court judges. Think of that. It's not happened, you know.
No, you followed through. The 53 appeals court judges are all solid, and I hope
and
you keep making them.
And the appeals court judges are, you know, I'm getting rave reviews, and even some of the those on the left are saying, well, we don't agree with them, but they are very powerful picks. So we're getting rave reviews on judges, I will say that. But, you know, who's had so many? Now, I was given a gift because I had 142 when I first came in. I said, you know, I've always heard, and you've always said, and I've always heard the most important thing you can do are Supreme Court justices and judges. You know, combination, really, both. And I said, how many do I have my first day? Sir, you have 142. I said, you got to be kidding. So I started off with 142. Most presidents start off with none. I would say very rarely do you have one. I had 142, got them filled with really talented, very, very great people, very highly respected people. And from there, I've gone on to continue to fill a lot of judgeships. A lot of people have retired because they got to a certain age and they retired. We didn't discourage that. And we will be over 300. It's hard to believe, but we'll be over 300.
It's a great achievement. If there is a vacancy this year or early next year or any time in your second term, do you have a choice already in mind to nominate?
I do. I have somebody that I think would be excellent. I do.
Is she named Amy Coney Barrett?
No, I can't. I can't name who. But I have somebody that I think would be really well received, would be excellent, highly respected. I mean, that's subject to change. But somebody that really would be, I think, great.
All right, let me switch over to foreign affairs. Secretary Azar's visit to Taiwan was significant. Was this a trial run for something bigger? Have you considered or are you considering a historic visit to Taiwan yourself before the end of this year?
No, I'm not. No, it wasn't, anything like that. It wasn't. It was just something we were talking about. COVID, they've done well. We've done well also. We get no credit for it. You know, we do so much testing, so we end up with, when you do testing, you have cases. You know, we tested more than, about 65 million tests. India's at 11. Germany's at 3. And we're at 65. When you test, you have cases. But we've done very well. And that was really a visit on COVID, or as I call it, the China plague or the China virus, which is
Given China's recklessness with the virus and its aggressiveness, especially with its new deal with Iran, should Japan, South Korea, or even Taiwan seek nuclear weapons or hypersonic missile capacity, Mr. President?
Well, I'm not going to suggest anything, but I will tell you it causes problems, and it's a big point of discussion for us over the next 2 months. I will tell you that it's going to be a very big point of discussion.
Do you find their alliance with Iran to be particularly troubling in their pattern of recklessness?
I don't like it. I don't like it. Not at all. And my relationship is much. I had a very good relationship with President Xi. But once it turned to once we got hit with a virus that they didn't get hit, you know, they contained it in China. Now they've had outbreaks like everyone else, but they contained it essentially in China. But they didn't contain it from the U.S. and Europe and the rest of the world. 188 countries, 188 countries.
You told me in 2016, Mr. President, that you would get up to speed on all the terrorists, and you did. Was it a hard call for you to order Soleimani killed?
It's never an easy call. It's always a you're talking about human life one way or the other. You don't know where it leads. It's turned out. And al-Baghdadi, don't forget, took out the founder and leader of ISIS who was trying to build it again. When I took over, ISIS was prevalent. It was all over the place. And I wiped out ISIS in Syria and Iraq, 100% of the caliphate. And we found that al-Baghdadi, now he's the one that was stood. I always said the one with the fan. He always had the fan. You know, it was the old picture, but he always had the fan behind it. I said, why can't you find him? And I was looking for him from the beginning. And we knocked out him, as you know. That was big. And then we did Soleimani. And there are those that say that the Soleimani was the biggest move made in the Middle East of anything, and I don't even view it that way. What he did to our soldiers, what he did to people, he was the king of the roadside bomb. He loved the roadside bomb. He loved blowing people's brains out, loved blowing people's legs off and arms. And I see him in the hospital. I go over to Walter Reed, and they are badly, just bad, the military. They are badly, badly injured. And that was really a Soleimani thing.
Yes, it was.
A large percentage of those bombs were either directly or indirectly put there by Soleimani.
More of my interview with President Trump a bit later. Joe Biden committed to picking a female VP candidate during the Democratic primary debates. And recent statements he made disparaging the black community created a situation in which he really needed a black vice presidential candidate. He went with safety in the selection of California Senator Kamala Harris. She's smart, she's tough, she's firmly on the left. Seth Leibson, Salem host on AM 960, The Patriot out of Phoenix, Arizona, looks at Biden's choice.
Let me just say, I can't remember, I've been watching the news since it broke, I can't remember a single vice presidential nomination since maybe Walter Mondale chose Geraldine Ferraro in 1984 that has gotten this much attention. Stay with me a second. Quick, who is Hillary Clinton's running mate? I'm surprised you came up with Tim Kaine so quickly. Most people just can't remember that he was a vice presidential nominee. Yeah, takes a while for most people to remember that. There was nothing about that. Very, very little in the discussion and coverage of Lloyd Benson when Michael Dukakis picked him. Al Gore is Bill Clinton's running mate. there's a lot more on this than any of those. Why so much attention? I think there's an implicit, from the mainstream journalists, an implicit understanding or concession that she's not just the star of this ticket. She's actually going to be the main of this ticket. Because if the Biden presidency obtains, if he wins the election, it's going to be an administration run by a lot of other people in a way we're not used to. Let me remind, there was a lot of talk about Reagan's age, a lot when he was president, a lot when he ran for president. When he retired and left the Oval Office in 1989, he will have been younger than Joe Biden will be when he takes the oath of office to enter the presidency. Reagan was younger leaving the White House than Joe Biden will be going into the White House. I think there's a concession here, and that's why there's so much attention on her. The other thing is she's far more interesting than he is, and she's far more available than he is. It's something you want to be careful of. You don't usually want to pick someone that's going to outshine you. She will outshine him on the campaign trail. She will be more available on the campaign trail. And I think it's a concession of understanding by everyone who's covering this that she will be the virtual president if Joe Biden is elected. In a way, it makes some sense that he picked her, in that he had kind of boxed himself in by committing to choosing a female candidate. He also then continued to play the game that required him to choose a person of color, in the parlance of our times, a minority, racial or ethnic minority. Once you narrowed it down to a woman in those categories, none of these no-named congresswomen or failed Georgia candidates were going to do the job. It had to be between Susan Rice and Kamala Harris. Susan Rice has absolutely zero charisma, would have lit up nothing, is known in Washington, D.C. as another establishment figure. Final thing, Ari Fleischer has a series of tweets on Kamala Harris, and he's got her number. Harris is a fake, an empty suit. She accused Biden of being a segregationist, but then agrees to run with him. Either she faked her allegation against Biden or she's faking now. She faked her position in favor of Medicare for all until it became unpopular. Then she opposed it. She produced a fake edited video about what Brett Kavanaugh said, and then she got caught faking Brett's statements. She once acted tough on crime, no longer. All of this is true. None of it will matter. None of it will matter.
Coming up.
If I don't win the election, China will own the United States. You're going to have to learn to speak Chinese.
More of my conversation with President Trump when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. To this day, it's truly remarkable that the effort to spy on then-candidate Donald Trump is a story the mainstream media has no interest in pursuing. There was a time that when even leaders the media despised received somewhat fair treatment from the press. With few exceptions, those days are gone, and a massive scandal remains buried. I discussed that issue with Donald Trump. But first, we looked at his relationship with Russia. You took a lot of heat, some of it from me, over the first Helsinki meeting with Putin. But I also gave President Obama heat when he whispered to Medvedev to tell Putin it would be okay after the election. So I had heat for both of you. Who's been tougher on Russia, you or President Obama?
By a factor of 50, me, okay? Number one, he sent pillows, and I sank. I said, send them the tank busters, okay? Number two, I got NATO to pay $400 billion a year more to protect themselves against Russia. Obama got nothing except it went down, down, down. Those things. I revealed the pipeline Nord Stream 2. Nobody even talked about it. Germany's getting their energy from Russia. I said, what kind of a deal is this? You're paying Russia billions of dollars. We're protecting you from Russia. What's this all about? I built our military, $2.5 trillion. Our military is the strongest it's ever been right now. I spent $2.5 trillion. Obama, our military was depleted. I also took care of our vets, and I took care of lots of other things, that we have Space Force. And we became the biggest energy in the world. We're now the biggest energy by far in the world.
And I think the most important thing you've done is you reframed the China relationship, breaking with the policy of 50 years to make sure we know they're an adversary. But you tweet nice things about President Xi. Is it possible to both be nice to people and also be tough as hell on them?
I had a very good relationship with President Xi. I would even say better than good. I would say we had a great relationship. He's a great gentleman, but my relationship is no longer very good with him because of what they did with the China virus. If you ask me that now, I would have said great. I had a great relationship with him. I made a great trade deal. They're buying billions and billions of dollars worth of product. You notice you don't hear the farmers complaining, do you? They just gave the largest corn order in history last week, the largest ever. You know why? Because he's smart. Because rather than saying we're not going to do business with them, they say, let's get the biggest orders we've ever gave, because they know how I feel. And I'll tell you this, with Iran and with China and with everybody, Russia, we're dealing with Russia right now on a nuclear arms pact, and they want to do it. They want to do it badly. I don't think they'll wait. I think they want to do it, and it's a great thing. This is the biggest problem in the world today. We're dealing with Russia right now in that. But I'll tell you this, with China, but with Iran and North Korea, look what North Korea, everyone thought we were going to be. If Hillary Clinton got in, maybe the war would be over by now, but millions of people would have died. You would have had a war with North Korea. He expected to have a war. Where's the war? You don't have a war. And yeah, we have a very good, you know, very different, but very good relationship. What are those things? When he acts up, I say what's going to happen. I have a very good relationship. But here's what's going to happen. If I win, you'll have a deal with Iran in the first month. Because all they're waiting for, and China too, they're hoping that I'm defeated. Because if I'm defeated, China will own the United States. And Iran will go back to a deal even better than the first terrible deal where they got $150 billion plus $1.8 billion in green. The Obama administration got caught spying on my campaign. It's treason. It's whatever you want to call it. It's never happened before. And working on it both before and after the election. And that has to do with, you know, Strzok and his lover, Page, when they did the insurance policy. Just in case she loses, we have an insurance policy. Obama got caught, and he knew everything. Obama knew everything, and Biden knew everything.
Ambassador O'Brien said China wants Vice President Biden to win. Why do you think that is?
Because they'll own the United States if he wins. And with me, they were having the worst year in 67 years because I tariffed the hell out of them. We took in billions and billions of dollars. I gave some of it to the farmers because they were targeted, and I put the rest in the Treasury of the United States. We've taken in tens of billions of dollars from China, and it was having a huge impact on China, negative impact on China.
You're still
China
the best.
China will own, just like when his son walked out with $1.5 billion from China to manage, where he'll make millions of dollars a year. Look, China will own the United States if this election's lost by Donald Trump. If I don't win the election, China will own the United States. You're going to have to learn to speak Chinese.
After my conversation with the president, I spoke with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson about his role in trying to get James Comey, among others, to testify before his Senate committee on their role in spying on Donald Trump. Senator Johnson is chairman of Homeland Security, and I pressed him hard and repeatedly in the interview. He said he will not name names on who is obstructing the process. Later, I learned through a reporter at Politico that Johnson does have, in fact, the power to subpoena Comey and others. Asked about it later, aides of Senator Johnson called the contradiction a, quote, misunderstanding. Listen carefully and see if you sense a misunderstanding. In October of last year, it's been since October, you were on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, and you said you don't trust Brennan, you don't trust Comey, you don't trust Strzok, you don't trust any of them. Why haven't they been subpoenaed by your committee yet? It's been 10 months.
Well, first of all, I need approval of my committee members, and it was tough enough getting the subpoenas on Blue Star Strategies and then the other subpoena authority I've got. So, and also, Lindsey Graham has been given the assignment by Leader McConnell to really investigate that portion of the corruption, and he's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So, I mean, you do have some kind of lines of jurisdiction in terms of what you're trying to do.
Look, everybody in this audience wants Jim Comey under oath, and they want John Brennan under oath. They want Andrew McCabe under oath. And it seems to me, if you've got a Republican on your committee, and if you only have a one or two vote majority on your committee, Senator?
Well, if I lose one, I lose the vote. So
okay.
It doesn't make
so sense. I'd like to know which Republican is blocking a Jim Comey subpoena from you, because the election is here, and whether it's you or Lindsey, we're out of time. You guys have blown the time. It's like they ran the four corners offense against you, and you've run out of time.
Well, let me back up and say, before you interview people, you want the documents so you can ask them intelligent questions. That's why I finally subpoenaed the FBI to get the documents.
But Senator, that does nothing for me. It does nothing for me. We have waited for 3 years for someone to put Comey under oath. That's you or Lindsey. I'll blame you both, but yeah, you know,
that's fine.
Well, it's not fine. The American people, fine. We are owed answers about an attempted coup at the president, and we're not getting them from the legislative oversight. And you are one of the two chairmen.
And I'm just telling you, I had a devil of a time just getting the subpoena authority that I got.
What does that mean? I mean, who is the screw up on your committee? Which Republican doesn't want to get to the bottom of this?
We had a number of my committee members that were highly concerned about how this looks politically.
Who?
Hugh, I'm just not going to be naming names that way.
I have had it with Republicans in the Senate calling up nobody that we want to hear from. And we've never seen any of these people under oath being asked questions and documents. I don't need documents. I could ask Jim Comey questions in my sleep.
And he would dodge him. He wouldn't remember, and he wouldn't subject himself to getting his classification, his security clearance up again. So he'd say, oh, I'm not cleared to answer those kind of questions.
To hear the entire interview, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up, United States Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson on the riot.
It's almost as if people had a plan prepared and were just waiting for an excuse to enact it.
And later, President Trump talks about the upcoming debates with Joe Biden.
If he stands up and if he is able to breathe and if he's able to walk off the platform, they'll say it was one of the greatest debate performances in history.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The pandemic created a crisis not experienced in our lifetime. You have to go back 100 years for a comparison to a time very different from our own. So our leadership has had to learn on the fly. Ben Carson, the United States Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, faces a daily dilemma, trying to figure out how to keep unemployed families in their homes. He sat in with Salem host Sebastian Gorka.
An amazing weekend of decisions, a flurry of action being taken by the president and his team when it comes to responding to the Chinese virus, the coronavirus, which also affects people in America who are renting their homes, renting where they live. Could you talk to us about your role and the department's role in the response to this pandemic?
Well, you know, fortunately, there are those who really do want to respond and don't want to use this as a political hockey puck. And what the president has asked us to do is to look at all of the mechanisms and policies and authority that we have in order to prevent evictions. Now, what should be recognized immediately is that for months people have been predicting horrible things with evictions, and it hasn't occurred so far. And that's because, for one thing, the American people are a lot more responsible than anybody gives them credit for. And even though we have been, you know, supplying some extra money to the CARES Act, many people have had to really tighten their belts and have been quite responsible about meeting their obligations. Having said that, also recognize that a large number of the people that we support at HUD are elderly or disabled individuals, about 60% of the multifamilies. So those people are basically on fixed incomes, fixed subsidies, and those really leave them in very good shape in this kind of situation because, you know, no matter what's going on with everybody else, they're receiving their subsidies and they're having their rent taken care of. For some of the others, because we insure the properties or provide subsidies to the tenants, we can require and continue to require that they provide forbearance to the individuals who are affected, including not evicting them. The same thing, you know, goes for foreclosures on single-family housing. So we're looking at all of those things as well as the extra CARES Act funding that we have to bridge the gaps wherever they exist.
It must be such relief to those people to know that they are safe despite everything that the Chinese virus has done to ravage our nation and the globe. Let me ask you a broader question, if I may, in the last few minutes we have with you. Please follow him right now. He's Dr. Ben Carson at Secretary Carson on Twitter. You have been through the ringer. You have been through the crucible of fire as a member of the Trump administration. But did you ever, despite your personal experience, did you ever expect in America to see such political exploitation of a crisis as we have seen in the last few months?
Well, I am surprised that it has occurred with the rapidity that we've seen. And it's almost as if people had a plan prepared and were just waiting for an excuse to enact it. And unfortunately, a lot of people have been pulled into, acting out, and they don't really even know what they're acting out about. And, you know, initially what started as protests regarding George Floyd, I think probably a lot of the people you're protesting don't even know his name.
Yeah.
And this is really very unfortunate. And it's a matter of pitting people against each other. The identity politics has just gone crazy. And you think back to Dr. Martin Luther King and what he was able to accomplish through nonviolent protests. The biggest social changes ever to occur in our country came through nonviolent protests. What would he be saying if he were here today? I mean, he talked about dreaming of a time when people would be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And here we have a situation where everything is about identity politics and dividing people up on superficial characteristics.
It is the opposite. It is a rejection. It is the antithesis of what the Reverend Martin Luther King left us as his legacy. Follow him right now at Secretary Carson. He is Dr. Ben Carson, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And find out the information you need at hud.gov/coronavirus. God bless you and your bride, Candy. Thank you, Dr. Carson.
Coming up, a shutting down of America.
The lockdown has gone from mistake to immoral in my estimation.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Sweden took a lot of heat for refusing to shut down businesses and schools when the rest of the world closed. Then they saw a spike in cases and deaths. But this week, a graph out of Sweden revealed that the pandemic has all but vanished from the country. They took a risk, and it appears to some to have paid off. Meanwhile, here in the United States, some states remain closed while others open. In California, home of Salem host Dennis Prager, much of it remains shut down.
It's so bad, I can't overstate it. It's not possible to overstate the damage and the idiocy of the lockdowns. It's as if the virus has a certain number of people it's going to infect, certain number of people will die, and it almost doesn't matter what you do. Sweden seems to be a proof. You lock down. Okay, so let's say you lock down and you go to zero. So what are you going to do? Keep it at zero with a lockdown forever? Our morons who run the CDC and the others, they don't answer that question. Oh, yeah, till that vaccine comes. Are you an idiot? Do you understand that there will not be an America left to save? You stupid fools at the CDC and the stupid fools who... See, the Democrats listen to them partially because they have no wisdom, but partially because they really do believe that the worse things are, the better it is for their election chances. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Because look, it's obvious. You don't need to be a partisan to know this. If the country were humming along in the greatest economy since almost in recorded history, would be harder to defeat Donald Trump. Vote for us. We'll give you rent. Right? We'll give you rent. We've taken away your ability to pay your rent, and now we'll give you rent. That's what the left does. I'm just shocked that Americans have taken it. I'm very rarely surprised. You're going to tell me I can't make a living? Where are the chambers of commerce? Aren't they supposed to represent small businesses? Right? Where are they? Why aren't they calling for a massive open up your store and we'll all get arrested together? They'll put you in jail and they'll let out the violent criminals because of COVID, but they'll put you in jail. One day, Garcetti and Newsom will have to face God. That keeps me sane. You collected your salary while you screwed everybody else up, all you government workers, while you deprived these hardworking people, run a nail salon for making a living, people, the waiters. Oh, my God, I'm so angry on their behalf. You have no idea. See, this is the way it works. It's really unbelievable. Let us say the president did what I suggest. Only those of you who are really vulnerable stay home. The rest go to work. And then we would have had this many deaths. They would have said, you see, Trump's policies killed 160,000 people. No matter what happens, they win. If you lock down and it goes down, see, we're right. You open up and it goes up, you see, we're right. Anything that happens, you see, we're right. That's why they're so angry at Sweden. God, would I like to be in Sweden now? No masks, no lockdown, school going on. Yeah, of course its economy was hit. There's no tourism and there's no exports. Of course it's hit. But not like other countries. And they didn't pay a social price. How your kids doing, folks? 6 months at home. And another 6 months because of the coward teachers. And the corrupt teachers' unions. If there's anything in America more corrupt than teachers' unions, I'm not aware of its existence. California Teachers Union. We won't go back to work as teachers if you don't defund police. Isn't that astonishing? They don't give a crap about your kids. Teachers' unions care as much about kids as the communists cared about workers. They use your kids to further leftism. Don't you understand the pattern, folks? The lockdown is a farce, an immoral farce. It's gone from mistake to immoral in my estimation. Do you understand? The government is told, I'm almost speechless. That's the reason for the silence, because I'm losing the ability to find adjectives. The government, like in California, has told people that you can't make a living. Has this ever happened in American history? No, right? It's never happened. And Americans are taking it like, oh, of course. That's the change that the left has wrought in the weakening of the American character. Gavin Newsom? Just a fool, a simple fool. Can ruin your life's work for no good reason. You can sit within inches of a person, eat without a mask on an airplane for 4 hours, but you can't even distance sit in a restaurant. Can somebody explain why? No one can explain why. The whole thing's a fraud. Think of a friend of mine who owns a gourmet pizza place. put his life life work and savings into it. Gavin Newsom and the left have ruined his livelihood. I am so angry. And so many Americans go along with it. Print more money. That's the answer, right? Print more money so that your hard-earned savings become worthless. I mean, you could print enough money to support everybody, right? But then the dollar becomes like the Reichsmark in Weimar Republic Germany. Know what that led to? Nazism. My column deals with this. It's all about the death of the Judeo-Christian value system. All about it. That's it. That's all you need to know. When Christianity, and I'm a Jew telling you this, when Christianity died in Europe, you got Nazism, fascism, and communism. So what will you get in America? Is that a fair question? Well, you see it on the streets of Portland. That's what you get. I suspect that most of the people who are rioting didn't study the Bible that day. It's just a wild supposition. Secular conservatives have outsmarted themselves. They really believe that you can have belief in the Constitution to be as persuasive as belief in the Bible. The secular conservatives are as brainwashed about secularism as secular leftists. That's the irony. They don't understand secularism is a dead end.
Coming up, President Trump discusses his upcoming debates with Joe Biden.
If he stands up and if he is able to breathe and if he's able to walk off the platform, they'll say it was one of the greatest debate performances in history.
The final segment of my conversation with Donald Trump when we return to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt.
If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, Joe Biden picks Kamala Harris as his running mate.
What does she bring to a Biden ticket? Nothing.
What does it mean?
She's basically one of the engines legislatively and intellectually in the Democratic Party for the moral and sexual revolution.
We'll look at today's social unrest relative to the civil rights movement.
There's not much talk of reconciliation and certainly no talk of forgiveness.
And when school resumes, a Chicago suburb looks to bring back racial preferences.
Those who get to go back first will be determined by race.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I had many conversations with Donald Trump leading up to his election in 2016. 4 years later, we speak again. Now he's nearing the end of his first term in office, a much more experienced candidate. In his time, he's faced one of the most difficult obstacles a president can, a pandemic. It temporarily killed a record-breaking economy. Well, the pandemic is not over by a long shot, but the economy has already rebounded in large part, something that President Trump will be able to take with him into the debates with Democrat Joe Biden. Here is the last part of my conversation with President Trump.
You mentioned Hunter Biden getting $1.5 billion. Will you bring him up in the debates, Hunter Biden?
Well, I think he's subject to it. I don't like doing it, but it's, look, you walked away with $1.5 billion. You go to Steve Schwarzman of Blackstone and ask him, because I did, is that possible? He said, no, it's not possible. Not possible. He walked away in 10 minutes with $1.5 billion. And Ukraine, he got $83,000 a month. I think they made an upfront payment of $3 million. This guy didn't have a job. His father became vice president. All of a sudden, this kid is getting rich, and he didn't have a job. He had no experience in energy. And he got $3 million and $83,000 a month, which is the wrong number, because the real number is $160-something thousand a month. It's a disgrace.
Do you think you'll get more African-American votes this time than you did last time?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think a lot. Well, you saw there was a poll yesterday, a Rasmussen poll, that had me in the 30s, okay? But I've done criminal justice reform. I've done opportunity zones. I saved the black colleges and universities, historically black. I saved them. They couldn't get money. Nobody else would have done it. Nobody else could have done it. Nobody else could have gotten criminal justice reform. And Obama didn't think he could get it. He never even tried.
Let me close by asking about the debates. Do you think they're lowering expectations for Joe Biden for the debates?
Well, I'm not lowering expectations. Everyone else says I'm not. I don't do that. Look, whoever shows up. I watched him with Bernie Sanders, and he did okay. I wouldn't say it was Winston Churchill, but he got through. But you know the way it is, the fake news. If he stands up and if he is able to breathe and if he's able to walk off the platform, they'll say it was one of the greatest debate performances in history. The fake news is corrupt, and it's a disgrace, and it's now rated lower than Congress. At least in my mind, it's rated lower than anything. So if he goes and debates, if he said, yes, I had a wonderful breakfast, thank you for asking the question, they'll say it was one of the greatest answers in history. You know, I know what I'm up against. And I had a smaller dose of it with Hillary, but Hillary was smart. Joe was never smart. Joe wasn't smart in primetime. I've had a certain highly respected senator years ago. I said, who's the smartest person in the Senate? He gave me a name. Then he said, who's the dumbest? He said, Joe. I said, who's Joe? Joe. I said, who is he? I said, Joe. You don't know Joe? And we go along. He said, you're talking about Biden? Yeah, I'm talking about Joe Biden. I said, what, he's the dumbest in the Senate? He's by far. He's a glad hand. He called him a glad hand, and he was a friend. He was a friend of the guy. But he said, Joe Biden's the dumbest in the Senate.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. Sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richard, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.